You listen to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Second half begins right now. We're going to talk some Royals baseball as we turn to David Leske from Inside the Crown. He is with us on our T-Mobile guest line. He's brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. Got multiple games to watch tonight. I've got three basketball games to watch. How do I do it, you might ask? True, the DVR is one way that you could get it done, or you could watch them all at once because Applause Custom Sight and Sound can build you something way better than any sports bar you've ever been in, right? If you want the ultimate game day experience, let Applause Custom Sight and Sound build it for you. Been in business for almost 20 years in an industry where most companies don't last two. I know. I've been working with Applause since 2004. That's when they did the first project to my house and a new house and just did another project with them. Because they build it right, it's easy to add on, expand. Nobody does it better. Call Applause Custom Sight and Sound today, 913-498-1183. Rocket fast Wi-Fi inside your house, outside your house, smart home technology, all of it. They do it and do it better than anyone else. 913-498-1183. Find Applause online at applause.com. theater.com. David, welcome to our T-Mobile guest line. How are you, buddy?
I am doing great. I just logged into MLB TV and there's games next week, so I'm good.
Yeah. Life is good when they start playing the games, no doubt about it. And we're looking forward to it because there's always so much you can keep, you know, pondering about the lineup. We need guys to start sucking or excelling. Yeah. Like, we need to start, you know, taking that non-roster invitee who's hitting 571 and announce him the number three hitter. And then we need, you know, the guy we're counting on to be in the middle of the rotation to have a 70 ERA so we can freak out about it, right? Overreacting to spring training numbers is a birthright for all baseball fans, is it not?
I personally cannot wait for Carlos Santana to be 1-for-7 and people talk about firing Dayton Moore for signing him.
I love it. You know it's going to happen. All right. Oh, yeah. I want to talk about your article that you wrote about Brad Keller, because I thought it was a great piece, because it's something we've kind of pondered. I've tried to figure out, is Brad Keller good? Because some of the peripherals tell you, like, he's a ticking time bomb. Like, his quantity of walks per inning, it's too high. That's usually a sign if a guy's got a good ERA with too many walks per inning. You look at it, you go, well, this is about to blow up. Except for his hits per inning are shockingly low. His WHIP is overall walks plus hits divided by innings pitched. And these are some of the easy stats that are out there. Say that, no, this is sustainable because he keeps the hits down, which makes up for the, you know, the walks. I guess he's kind of the epitome of consistently effectively a little bit wild, right? But then the lack of strikeouts say that, no, there shouldn't be any kind of consistency there. You did a deeper dive, and what did you find about Brad Keller?
There's nobody like him. He's a weird pitcher. And you're right, it's interesting because he doesn't give up hard contact. He doesn't give up extra base hits. So the walks don't hurt as much. And you have two home runs in 2020. I think they're both Daniel Vogelbach, too. And it might have been one game. Does that sound right? I should look at that. Either way, like, he just doesn't give up home runs or that many extra base hits in general. And so, yeah, he walks guys, but does it hurt as much as other pitchers? No. But also, he walks guys, but he doesn't strike guys out. And the bat hits the ball way too much. And when, you know, strikeouts and out, what, 99.97% of the time, a batted ball is not an out that often. And so you want to miss bats more than you don't. And it's just that he's confounding. And to your point, is he good, is he not? I mean, he's been good. The results he's had in the first 3 years of his career have been good. You cannot argue that. But, you know, when you're talking about potentially giving out a long-term contract extension, and every team is guilty of this, but you're not paying for what he did. You're paying for what he will do. And so, like you said, I tried to look and see who he was like, how he might age. And the problem is there's very little as far as comparable pitchers. There's a couple guys. I mentioned Garrett Richards, who was really, really good for a flash. Justin Masterson, who had really good stretches, but both those guys got hurt. And like there were 28 pitchers who were kind of like him that I found since 1995. And like 23 of them had long-term injuries. And then one was Yordano Ventura. So there's just very little to go on with how Brad Keller might age. And I guess, like you said, he's just going to keep being confounding because what do you make of the guy who does pretty much nothing peripherally that people like, but still keeps succeeding?
Yeah, no, and the name that you had in there that excited me and that I was hoping was going to be like, here's the guy, was Brandon Webb. And if people don't remember Brandon Webb, he was a tremendously effective pitcher. And I do see the similarities between them and why they would kind of pop up on the same search. You know, is it when you can't find the comp? You know, I've always said, like, the truly great ones, like Michael Jordan wasn't the next Dr. J. I mean, there are some similarities between them. He was the first Michael Jordan, and LeBron James is not the next Michael Jordan. He's the first LeBron James. They kind of cut their own path. Now, I'm not here to tell you that Brad Keller's about ready to turn into the best pitcher in baseball, right? I'm just making a point to kind of demonstrate that, like, when you do something exceptional, you're kind of the first guy to do it. That's why it's exceptional. You know, the way you do it, you're the first. So I'm not predicting that he's going to be it, but is it possible that we're going to watch him? And you talk about how young he is. He's what, going to be 25 this year, I think, is his age.
Yeah.
You know, to have the kind of successful innings he's got under his belt when he's just beginning, not even really, he's still kind of a couple years away from the prime age for pitchers. Is there a chance that we're looking at a guy that all of a sudden – you know, and you talk about the changeup being added. That's one of the things in the piece that you discussed, that he only threw 17 changeups last year. But it's a good pitch. It's an evolving pitch, hopefully one he's been working on. That when he adds that, that could be the next thing, that all those, you know, he keeps the hit rate low. It enables him to get more swing and misses, which gets guys out of there faster, which means he doesn't get to the walks, doesn't get the ball four as fast as he normally would have. Because he just doesn't get that many pitches in on a batter because he gets them punched out quicker because the changeup becomes that kind of pitch. Is it possible that he's about ready to become an absolute superstar?
I mean, sure, it's possible. The thing is, he's got to strike out more guys to become
a superstar. Dumb question, Dave. Let me put it this way. Is it probable?
I don't think it's probable because, you know, when you're striking out, what is it, 17% of hitters or something like that, that's just not enough. You got to – I mean, you really need to be at 22, 23% before you can talk about really taking that next step. And of course, there are exceptions, and he's been that exception, and he was that exception in 2020, short season as it was. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. The guys who don't have comps, you know, they don't have comps because they're different. and that's not a bad thing to being different in this game because – you know, guys go up there and they're seeing so much velocity that 99 doesn't even make people flinch anymore. Well, maybe the guy who gets the weak contact all the time, maybe he is the difference maker. And if this new ball is a real thing, if it really does actually deaden things a little bit, that's going to help Brad Keller too. So that's a chance to take a step forward. He really does need that other pitch. He needs something to be able to, like you said, I think part of the problem is he gets to deeper counts because he only has two pitches really to set up. And so sometimes you got to waste an extra pitch if the hitter doesn't have a third pitch to think about. And so I think that's a big deal with Brad Keller. The other thing that I didn't mention in the piece, but I may write about here soon, a lot of the Royals' spin rates on their sliders. You saw it with Duffy, you saw it with Keller, a couple other pitchers. They increased in 2020. I don't know if that's because of a concerted effort or if that's because of, you know, they had a short season and so they were able to kind of go all out knowing that they only had to throw, 65 innings at most, something like that. So that could be the case. But his slider got a little bit dirtier in 2020. And that might help a little bit, too, moving forward if he can pair that. Even if he throws the changeup, he threw it, 2% of the time in 2020, even if it's like 8% in 2021, just enough that it's there in a hitter's mind. I think there's a chance he takes a jump. If you put a percent on it that he becomes a top flight pitcher that you can count on year after year, I'd probably put it at 10%, but it's there. it's a better chance than I think you see with a guy like Danny Duffy. And part of that is age. Part of that is I just think that Brad Keller has that skill set that I think maybe may make him more valuable relatively quickly, but he's a nice piece to have. And we talk about all these young pitchers. He's barely older than Brady Singer and Daniel Lynch and Jackson Kowar, and he's had three solid big league seasons, so solid or better big league seasons. And you know, Brady Singer was pretty good in 2020. Chris Bubich was pretty good in 2020, but the rest of them, they haven't had a single big league pitch and Brad Keller has been good for 3 years. So, you know, he's a valuable pitcher in the Royals rotation. Just a weird one, kind of.
Yeah. I was like searching for guys that kind of didn't have strikeouts that then found the strikeouts. And I was thinking of guys like Daryl Kyle.
Matt Cain is another one.
Matt Cain, you know, that's one of the things. Like, usually a guy comes up, he's a flamethrower, he gets the strikeouts, and then the strikeouts, you know, the arm wears down and the strikeouts go away, and they learn to be a pitcher more than just a thrower. And that's the more normal progression. But there are some that the strikeouts build and grow, and maybe he's going to be one of those guys. You know, where I feel so comfortable with Brad Keller, and why I hope, and you kind of breached this in the topic as well, that they're looking to get an extension done, is the fact that I think, you know, he's he's got at such a young age, he's got a nice body of work already to where you can say this isn't a fluke, right? But he's like, I feel like this is the ground floor, and the ground floor is somewhere between Jeff Suppan and Gilmesh.
Yeah.
And people, you know, boo Jeff Suppan because they were dumb and they were just frustrated Royals fans and didn't realize he was actually really good. Then he goes off and is the NLCS MVP and wins a World Series. And you know, his career has been outstanding. Now he's in the Royals organization
and now
as a coach. Yeah, exactly. But you know, he was a guy that had good stuff and knew how to pitch. He never did turn into an ace. But, you know, you've at least got a guy that is a big physical guy that looks like he ought to be able to handle a big workload. And so, you know, that's the ground floor. But if he does find that pitch that, you know, like you said, that third pitch that keeps him off balance and the swing and miss is added to the equation, then we're talking about a guy who could, I'm not going to say be in the mix for the Cy Young every year, but could put together that magical year where he wins 21 games and the ERA stays down, you know, for across 190 innings. For a 220, and he steals a Cy Young, where you look back and go, wow, that guy won a Cy Young. You know, pretty damn good pitcher, but holy cow, what a year he had. Like, that to me is kind of the upside.
Well, look at a guy now in the Royals division, Lance Lynn, is another example. He's not – didn't really have the peripherals that Keller did when I looked at the numbers. But, I mean, that's a guy – he didn't get a ton of strikeouts. But he's a big boy who could handle a workload. And all of a sudden, he kind of changed his repertoire a little bit when he went to the Yankees, what was it, 2017, whatever it was, and became kind of a star. He became a really, really good pitcher, a Cy Young candidate type pitcher. And, you know, he threw 84 innings. He led the regular season within innings last season. I mean, that if you're looking for a comp that's next door basically now in Chicago, it's Lance Lynn. He's the guy who shows that it can be done. Yeah, in today's game, even.
Yeah, no doubt. We're talking right now with David Leske inside the Crown, where you can read his great work. David, the rest of the pitching, I like the depth. Like, I think we discussed this on Sunday Sound Off on Sunday. You know, I like the pitching is where you'd like to see the hitting get to, in the sense that they've got great young arms that are on the way. They've got some solid veterans in front of them, so they're not just going to be handed the job. They've got a guy in Jacob Junis that'll tease you every now and then, who's not going to be handed a job. He's either going to find a way to be a reliever, but he's going to be motivated. Like, that's where you want your whole team to be. And they're not there position player-wise. Nicky Lopez didn't really hit well enough to earn the job. He defended well enough, but didn't hit well enough to really have second base given to him, but it's probably going to be given to him. But on the pitching side, in certainly in the rotation, but also I think even back to the bullpen, the beauty of it is you've got to be good or there's somebody else that can do your job for you. I mean, they have kind of arrived as a pitching staff, have they not?
Yeah. I mean, and one thing that I've said a lot this offseason and since last season, in 2021, because of the small number of innings, I think in a rotation, 6 through 10 in 2021 might be as important as 1 through 5 for a lot of teams, just because there's going to be guys who make 30 starts, but there's going to be a lot of guys who make 20 starts. And it's just you're going to need additional, way more starting pitchers than you typically need in a typical season. So the Royals are in really good shape there because they've got their starting five, and I think Dayton just said an hour ago that they're pretty well set there, barring any injuries. And so, you know, I think we have a pretty good idea who that's going to be with the same starting five that ended last season, and Mike Minor included. But then you've also got Daniel Lynch, who they're raving about already in camp, Jackson Coar, Jonathan Heasley is a guy who I think Alec Lewis mentioned in The Athletic yesterday. Today, I can't remember when the article was. Austin Cox, Jonathan Bolin. I mean, we can just keep naming names. Carlos Hernandez, who we saw for 15 or so innings in 2020. He's another guy. There's just arm after arm after arm. And that extends to the bullpen, too, because Daniel Lynch should come up and throw 99 from the left side and get in 20 innings before they need a starter if they want to throw him in the bullpen for a month and a half. So there's just there's almost, it seems like, an endless supply of arms, which I don't want to say that too loud because I don't want to tempt the baseball gods there. You know how that can work.
Right.
But they do. They have so many good, young pitching prospects behind this staff that's kind of littered with veterans but also has some young guys thrown in. I mean, you look in the bullpen, Tyler Zuber, Josh Staumont, not necessarily young in age, but young in experience. And they're young in age. It's not young in baseball age. Kyle Zimmer, you know, these guys who, they don't have a lot of experience, but they showed something in different ways, especially last season, plus Singer and Bubich in the rotation. I mean, there's a lot to like about the big league staff. And then, like you said, if they don't perform, okay, time to go to Omaha for 2 weeks and figure it out, or more, because we got another guy who's ready to go. And you're right, that's exactly where you want to be. And I think especially in 2021, that's going to be very important.
Yeah, I agree. We're talking right now with David Leske about the Kansas City Royals. The position players, though, is ultimately, I remember Jim Bowden being on with us previous to the James Shields trade, and he said something very prophetic. He said the Royals are getting to a point where Dayton Moore is going to have to make a trade that hurts. And he explained that as, look, you got all this talent, but now you got to make it all fit a ball club. And he said he's going to have to go out and find a pitcher, and he's going to have to move something that's good. Some of these young bats are going to have to go get a pitcher. Lo and behold, later that year, they ended up moving the Will Myers, the principal, Will Myers and Oda Rizzi, and I can't remember who else was in it. Was Jeffress in that deal going that way too?
Yeah, Patrick Leonard was definitely in that deal.
Patrick Leonard, that's right, for James Shields.
Yeah.
Are we approaching that point for the Royals where, again, Dayton Moore is going to have to make the trade that hurts? This time, it's going to be the reverse. He's going to have to move some pitching, some good pitching, some pitching that's going to be successful in the big leagues for a bat that finishes off the batting order.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, if you look around, who do they have ready for any spot? You've got probably Bobby Witt. I don't think this year, but next year probably. And he could go third, second, short, somewhere in there, depending on Mondesi and all that. You've got Kyle Isbell, who I think is I was just talking to Jed last night, actually. If he's your fourth or fifth best player, you're probably fine. If he's your first or second best player, you're in big trouble. He's a guy I think can slot in, though, and be pretty solid. And then what else?
Wait, that was Kyle Isbell?
Yeah.
Are you that high on Kyle Isbell? Because I look at a guy who's 24 and is going to be 24 this year and hasn't seen Double A.
I'm curious to see what he can do. I mean, he's in the conversation for me because I think he's got the tools to be a solid player. He's got the tools to be, I mean, he might hit him second because of his skill set or whatever, but he's got the tools to be, like I said, your fourth or fifth best player, maybe your sixth best player, and you're a pretty good team. But again, if he's kind of like Junis. If Junis is your best starter, your rotation's terrible. If Junis is your fifth best starter, your rotation's really pretty good. And I feel like Isbell will kind of, in my mind, falls in that realm. But and then the fact that we're talking about him tells how short the offensive talent is in the minor leagues. Now, they did make an overhaul of their development before last season, and we never got to see how that played out. We have no idea what kind of results there were. The organization is, I think it's a coordinated effort to talk up Nick Prado, and I don't know why they're coordinating it, but there's something coming on that front. But he's a guy I don't think will be good, but hey, maybe I'm wrong. Sully Matias, he's a guy, his swing has been shorter in winter ball at least, right? So that's something. MJ Melendez, he's a guy, I don't know. So I think we're going to get some answers in the next 4 or 5 months. But as of right now, yeah, they're going to have to make a trade that hurts. And the Royals, a lot of teams have this too. The Royals have a tell. If they don't bring up a guy who you think they should bring up, they're probably looking to trade him. And I mean, you think back to the 2012 season, Will Myers, Jeff Francoeur was terrible in right field. And Will Myers was tearing it up in AAA. And they never brought him up. Well, they didn't want him to fail at the big leagues. They wanted to keep that prospect shine on him. And so watch the pitchers who they don't want to fail in the big leagues. Those are the guys who, if you see a Jackson Coar in AAA, you know, the 1.87 ERA and a spot in the rotation opens up and they call up Jonathan Bolin, well, they're probably going to move Jackson Coar in the offseason. I mean, that's a pretty good bet that he's the guy they're going to pick to headline that trade. And I think they're going to have to do it. I think trading for Benintendi probably bought them a little time if they want to evaluate this season. But he's only he's under team control for two more years. Yeah, they could sign him to an extension, but we'll see about that, obviously. But yeah, they're in trouble on the position player side, and they're going to need to address that in some way, or else they're going to have to be content to try to win 2-1 games for a long time because they just don't have the firepower anywhere outside of, like I said, probably Bobby Witt. And, you know, Eric Pena is a ways away. We don't even know, but he's the guy who he could become that mega prospect. We just don't know yet, but they don't have much else.
Yeah, he's the 17-year-old kid, right? The
Latin kid. Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Obviously Latin, Pena, duh. Well, I mean, that's a stupid statement. But international, that's what I mean
international
to say.
Signing,
international
yeah.
signing, yeah. So do you have a candidate? You said, like, watch who they keep down as Coar. That, do you have a candidate for who that guy is?
Yeah, I mean, Coar is the guy I keep coming back to. I feel like it's not going to be Lacy because he's the guy who – he and Lynch are the two who, if you're looking for a true ace, I think those are the guys who are the best bets. And I don't think they're going to move them. But Coar, to me, kind of feels Will Myers-ish as far as his place in the organization. A really good prospect who might be the best they have. Maybe, maybe not. I don't, you know, he's got the stuff to kind of get up there. If he can get that breaking ball, he could be really, really good. But he also could be a reliever. Kind of like Will Myers. He could have been a number three hitter, or he might be a number six, seven hitter. Still really valuable, but not the star that the numbers show. He's the guy to me who just kind of feels like, we like him, but we're willing to give him up. But like I said, it could be anybody. If you, like I said, you see a guy tearing it up in the minors and they're not being called up, and there's probably a reason for that.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think that's a good thing to look at. All right. So what do you expect from this lineup this year?
Well, if they can stay healthy, and that's a big if, because there's depth within the lineup, 1-7 at least, but there's just not depth beyond those guys. And so, look, if and when Hunter Dozier takes his 3 weeks off that he's had to take off throughout his career for injuries, who is it? Kelvin Gutierrez? I mean, the Hanser Alberto signing helps a little bit as far as depth is concerned, but also it's Hanser Alberto. I mean, he was available on a minor league deal for a reason. It's not like he's going to step in and hit fourth. Jorge Soler has not played a full season. Carlos Santana is 35, 36. Weird as a 36-year-old myself calling that old, but it is for baseball, you know. And who knows if he can stay healthy. Benintendi has had injury issues the last two seasons. I mean, they're kind of fluky, but they've happened. So if they can't stay healthy, there's going to be pretty much the same problems we've seen for the last 3 or 4 years. But if they can stay healthy, you've got a really nice lineup of some patience, some power, some speed, and then you just have to hope that 8 and 9 are, can bloop a single in because Taylor and Lopez at the bottom will probably kill a lot of rallies. But look, two guys killing a rally is much better than 4 or 5 guys killing a rally like they've had the last couple seasons. And so if healthy, it's a fairly deep lineup that I think can make some pitchers work, get into bullpens. You might see this team early in a series set up to win a game in the 3rd or 4th game of a series, which we didn't see for a while. I mean, really since 2015, we haven't seen that with a Royals lineup. So it'll be a nice change, again, as long as everybody's healthy.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Salvador Perez in the final year of his deal. I expect them to extend him, or do you think that there's a chance that this is his last year with the Royals?
I would be shocked if he doesn't come up with an extension before the season starts. I mean, that's just the way they work with him. I don't know that I would extend him, but I think they're going to come up with, 3 or 4 years at $15 million per, and It'll be kind of a revolving contract that we see every 3 or 4 years until he just can't squat anymore, I feel like.
Yeah, that's what I think as well. I mean, I don't see them letting him go. Danny Duffy, final year as a Royal?
Oh, boy. You know, probably. I think that he's the type of guy who I could see him saying, yeah, I'll work in the bullpen. I'll give you 2 years, $10 million. And the Royals say, yeah, that's perfect. We'll take that depth all day long. But I could also see the Angels coming calling him going home. So I think barring a below market type deal, I think, yeah, this is probably it for him. But look, I don't think it's terribly out of the realm of possibility that he would take that below market deal.
What about the idea of, if the young pitchers are coming and forcing their way through, of Danny Duffy making his way back to the bullpen?
I think that's best for the team. I think that, but they don't really have a lefty out there, which is not a huge deal with a three batter minimum, especially. And if you've got guys who can get guys, I don't care what arm they throw with personally, but it would be nice to have a lefty out there. He was throwing 93 last season. If he could get that 94, 95 in short bursts, he could be a really valuable piece back there. So I like it. I think that makes a whole lot of sense. I think Duffy's never been a guy that is going to give you 33 starts anyway. So coming off, 54 innings he threw last year, might not be a bad idea to give him a little break, even in the middle of the season. Maybe flash him in some trade talks as a reliever, show some other teams what he could do potentially. I think the best thing for the 2021 Royals is that Danny Duffy ends up as a reliever because one of the prospects pushed him there to the bullpen.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he would be at his best, and I think you could even see a bigger uptick on the fastball.
You might be right.
If he's out there with the max effort. We're talking to David Leske. He does a great job on the Royals. You can read his work at Inside the Crown. Our Final Four is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours to see you quickly. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. We will not hold you to it. There's still all of spring training to go. Right now, though, what's your feeling on what the Royals' record will end up being?
I knew you were going to ask this. I'm going to go with 75 and 87. I could see it swing pretty far either way on that. I could see them go all the way up to 83, 84. I'm going to go with 75 right now. I might even stick with that if you ask me in a month. But, it's a tough team to gauge right now just because a lot of new faces, new pieces.
Sounds like David Leske saying to me, lock it up, stone cold lock of the year, over 71.5 wins on the Kansas City Royals if he's 75 with an upside of 84. All right, who is the 21?
I didn't say what the downside was, just for the record.
No, I don't want to hear that. Just we'll stick with what you had. 21 Royals saves leader is who?
Oh, man. I want to say Greg Holland, but I think Jesse Hahn.
Okay, interesting.
He was so good last year. I feel like, I don't know, I love Greg Holland, but he had the injury to end the season. I don't know if he's going to make it through this season too, so I'm going to go with Jesse Hahn.
Okay. How long is Dayton Moore in his current role with the Royals?
Oh, current role.
I'm not asking, like, how long is he with the Royals, because I could see some kind of, senior president thing where he's, not really hands-on. I'm talking about being the guy that's calling the shots.
I'm going to say through the 2023 season. I think he gets them through the new CBA, maybe gets them hopefully to some winning records, maybe another playoff berth, and then turns it over probably – well, I don't know. I guess I don't know who he's going to turn over to, but I think three more seasons worth.
Okay. All right. And finally, does Sal Perez make the Hall of Fame, the Major League Hall of Fame? He's already going to be in the Royals Hall of Fame. Does he make the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Look, they sell tickets to everybody. He can get in there if he needs to. I just don't think he's going to have the numbers. Royals fans are going to hate it when he falls off the ballot at some point, because he'll probably get the 5% because writers will. I'll enjoy voting for him every year, but I just don't think he's going to get the votes. And I don't think he deserves it unless he has a second half career renaissance, but Royals Hall of Famer for sure. And yeah, he can definitely go whenever he'd like to buy a ticket.
Okay. Okay. That's honest, man. That's why we have you on. David, great stuff as always, buddy. I encourage everybody to read that piece on Brad Keller. It's I think it's some of your best work, by the way, and you do a lot of really good work.
Thank you.
Everybody check it out. David Leskey from Inside the Crown. We'll talk to you again soon, my friend. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ren.
You bet. David Leskey with us here in the program. We'll take a break, talk a little more Royals baseball when we come back. A couple other things we want to get to. Still to come, Gary Parrish, our college basketball insider. He's in the 5 o'clock hour. You're in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
There's a familiar saying that knowledge is power. But there's another one that may be more to the point, that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Who was the first Florida State Seminole to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
I think this is an easy one, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, easy if you're an old fart. If you're a youngster and you didn't think of this, don't feel bad. But Freddie Biletnikoff, I believe, would be the answer. Is that correct?
That is correct. And he was the first by a long shot. He was the only Florida State player in the Hall of Fame until Deion Sanders, future five-star talent recruiter, in 2011. Derek Brooks and Walter Jones joined those two in 2014.
Jimbo Fisher winning a championship with Florida State means that they are not a one-coach program. But they were a one-coach program until Jimbo Fisher did that.
Yeah.
And I know he came right in after Bobby Bowden, but they were a girls' teaching college until, like, the 50s or something. And so they were not jammed with football talent. So he was, like, one of the first to really even be on the football team, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So it was tough for anybody really to beat Freddie Biletnikoff to that award. So, you know, but now certainly, you know, it has the makings of being more than just a, you know, two-coach program.
It's a little tougher to crash the party of the big boys these days than it was in the 1970s or 60s.
Is it?
I think so. I mean, the differences in just in facilities itself. I mean, I don't think.
I guess I would say versus what, like when Florida State did?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
okay.
There aren't any teachers, colleges, or whatever they were that's going to suddenly in 20 years be in the top five every year.
Yeah, Florida State, Miami, you know, coming along, Oregon, trying to get back in there. A couple of, you know, programs that have kind of come close. I think it's a fair point. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, what we were playing for. Joe's KC to send it, joeskc.com to send it anywhere in the country or put your order in today. Great night to grab some barbecue. On your way home, go to joeskc.com, 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, 117th and Row. Get some onion rings. They're the best onion rings in town. Incredible fries. They are absolutely dangerous. And, of course, the barbecue. The star of the show. I might recommend the Rockin' Pig sandwich. Jeb would recommend the gumbo. I would also very, very much recommend the ribs. They are phenomenal. Get you a short end is my favorite. You can go the whole slab, but I love the short ends. They're absolutely out of this world. And I, you know, until I started eating at Joe's, I was not a big rib guy. All right, so I'm going to tell you, I'm not the guy that, like, just, what are any ribs I'll take. That's not me. There are most places I am not getting ribs. I love the ribs at Joe's. They're phenomenal.
And I would recommend getting the Rocket Pig and the gumbo. And the ribs to go, you know, to like heat up the next day.
Some burnt ends. My wife would recommend the burnt end dinner.
So good.
That's her choice. My daughter likes the brisket beef sandwich.
And something that might not wouldn't be thought of top of the bat, like gumbo, is a barbecue thing, but their dirty rice is just phenomenal. It's got a little kick at the end. It's not too hot. It's got amazing flavor, and there's a little bit of kick at the end. That's my go-to side, is the dirty rice.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Get some today. Go to joeskc.com. Always like talking to David Leskey, such a bright baseball mind and does a great job covering the game. Brad Keller, can you see a scenario where he ends up being a star?
I couldn't paint you one. I mean, like, I wouldn't rule it out. But if you said, "Here, draw up the scenario where he becomes one," I'm having a hard time doing it.
here's why, and like I said, I think he's slotted in between Jeff Supon and Gilmesh. And if he's Jeff Supon, that's a heck of a pitcher and a very valuable commodity for this organization if he can soak up 200 innings on a regular basis. And that's something he has not proven to be able to do, which Jeff Supon did.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and we should probably talk in terms of 185, because I don't know how many guys are going to get to 200 anymore with the way they handle him. But I just look at him and go, this is a guy that threw 17 changeups last year. And so basically all of his success that he's had, and he's been pretty damn successful since being a Rule 5 guy for the Royals, has come, yeah, I guess it'd be singular, his success, his singular, has come without that part of the equation. Like, you're not supposed to be as good as he's been without that.
I know.
You know, usually the change of speed, the off-speed pitch, some guys use their curveball as that change of speed. But, you know, most guys are fastball change slider, fastball change curve. You know, the change is usually in there. And to just now be adding that to your repertoire says to me, if he perfects that pitch, the strikeouts are going to go up. The ground balls are going to stay there. And he's going to be just lethal. And I do think that there's – and I get that David Lesky doesn't want to go, yeah, I see stardom. But I think that's how you become a star. Like, when I say stardom, like, Pedro Martinez, Roger Clemens, no. I'm not going there, because I think we would have seen more swing and miss stuff already. But the guy that has, you know, a stretch run of being a dominant pitcher – and then kind of his stuff fades and he survives on guile and has a long career, but has a 4 or 5 year window where you're like, that guy's a top of the rotation guy. Like, I can see that if he perfects that changeup and does it quickly so that he can, you know, learn to harness it over 21 and then exploit it in 22, 3, 4, like his age, you know, 27, 8, 9, 30, 31. Like, that could be a guy that's just super dangerous.
Although he hasn't been stardom, the consistency with which he's been pretty good is something for a young pitcher. I mean, he had the little wobble in the middle of the 2019 season, but that was one that stretched him out more. He's seen guys second time, third time. Even that was in low fours, and he bounced back last year. I mean, how many career starts does he have right now? He has 57 career starts, and he's allowed
not even two full seasons.
Yeah, he's allowed more than four earned runs, only 9 times. That's pretty damn good.
Yes,
for a guy who's just turned 25.
Yes, I would agree. 913-3810-810 913-3810-810 We will take a break. 71.5 wins, is that the right number to be hanging on this team? Not that that's how many they're going to win, but is that the right number to be putting out there for the betting public to chew on? We'll talk about that next year on the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Good guy to hang out with. He's a good guy to work with. He's got the characteristics of what you would hope that your best friend or a brother would have.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Listen to the Program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. We're going to get to Need to Know. We'll hear from Dayton Moore, who met with the media here a little bit ago. Here's some of the highlights of his conversation. Also hear from Shaka Smart, Kansas getting ready to take on Texas. Little revenge game down in Austin. Kansas riding high on a 5-game win streak. Is it 5? Yeah, it's 5.
Yeah.
Oklahoma State and Texas Tech bookending the bottom feeders of Iowa State, Iowa State, K-State. The law firm, bottom feeders are us, Iowa State, Iowa State, K-State.
It's like Larry, Daryl, and Daryl.
Yeah, exactly. We will hear a little bit of Shaka Smart talking about the Kansas Jayhawks in our Need to Know. And then Gary Parrish, our college basketball insider. A lot to talk about. Chris Mack, the Louisville coach, with a video. Not too wise that got out there.
No.
He's making his apology. Duke, are they back? Are they for real? How much should we believe in KU's five-game win streak? We'll talk about that with Gary Parrish. A conversation we taped back in the 1 o'clock hour. The Big 12 also announcing what its schedule is going to be for next week. We'll get into that in the need to know as well. 71.5 wins is the win total that I saw for the Royals. Is that the right number to get fit half the money on each side?
I don't think it is. I don't think it's preposterous. I think the number would be higher.
On what? As a Royals fan, like, I think opportunity's there, and I would bet the over. First of all, I will never bet an under on one of my teams. I'll only bet the over because I do not want to be at the end of the season rooting for my team to lose to make money. Like, some people are like, well, I bet the under, and then if they suck, at least I made a buck or two. Okay. I mean, I get the logic. My brain doesn't function that way. So I want my team to win, and I'll bet it when I think they're going to win. So I think they're going to win more than 71.5 games. But I think it's actually the right number. First of all, USA Today hung that number on them, 71.8. The Pacoda projections have them at 71 and change. Fangraphs has them up at 78. I think it was it 78 and change or 77.8 or something?
I think 78 it was, and we change.
Up 78. Was it? Okay.
I think.
That's more where I think it is 78. Like right now, if I were to make my prediction, you know, like David Leske did, and, you know, 75, I was kind of hoping he'd be a little more bullish. Maybe I'm looking through royal colored glasses. But right now, I'm thinking 78 is probably a good number. And 500, I'd be thrilled if they got to 500. But I like the pieces that are there. My fear is, and the reason why I think 71.5 is the right number to have, is because there's no depth whatsoever in that lineup.
Yeah. You like the top nine, but oof.
I like the top seven.
The starting, they're okay, but nothing past that, man.
Yeah, Carlos Santana's 35 years old. Whit Merrifield's into his 30s. Andrew Benintendi was banged up last year. Salvador Perez has battled injuries in his career. You know, Adalberto Mondesi's never put together anything close to a full season of success, and he's never stayed healthy for a full season. So, like, this team needs to have, like, really good, you know, they need a Ben Zobrist that doesn't have a spot, that you say he's going to get 450 at-bats playing everywhere and he's ready to step in and play every day if somebody goes down. They need that guy. And right now, there's all these question marks. The lineup looks good when we give it the benefit of the doubt. But, when Leske was talking a little bit about, like, hey, I didn't tell you what the floor is. Well, like, if it all goes wrong, they don't score any runs, right? There's still plenty of guys with way, you know, Sal Perez's career on base is very low. Adalberto Mondesi's is very low. Nicky Lopez's big league on base is low, and he has not proven that he can hit. Michael Taylor's had 1 year where he was at least an average hitting outfielder. One, and that was like 4 or 5 years ago. You know, the Hunter Dozier's usually hurt, and he didn't hit well last year. I think we're seeing the lineup. We're giving it way too much credit for what the expectation is. I think it's the right number. I think they'll go over, but there are a lot of things that have to come through.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question, sponsored by Good Sense, chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, who's the only player to lead the league in getting hit by pitch 7 years in a row? Brought to you by Good Sense.